Hi folks, welcome to another edition of Gold Bazan. This is Pasha Hajian speaking. Myself, I'm Bob Aguiliz, another director of Gold Bazan. Was very delighted to be joined by Lutfi Wada, a huge expert on African football, somebody that knows African football inside and out, to speak about Morocco. As you guys have realized, we've been doing a two-part analysis as well with Tom Gugengard on Portugal and on Spain with Mr. Maldini. So check out those two interview outs if you haven't done so, please. And we have many special interesting things coming up. And as you guys know, our partnership with Adidas Duran, check it out on Instagram with the discount code GOLDBAZAN15. You could get some discount codes on the latest national team wear. Another interesting thing is, if you don't follow us on social media, please, we're giving out a free national team medley official polo kit. So, if a lucky winner could potentially win that. So follow us, retweet it, let folks know. And as always, we appreciate the support. Enjoy our talk with Mr. Lutfi Wada on Moroccan football and Group B with Iran. Thank you. Right now, I'm joined by Lutfi Wada and Babak Aguiliz. Lutfi, thank you for coming on Gold Bazan. It's an absolute pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks. Well, I'm very well.
Babak?
Be here as usual, Pasha, and nice to be acquainted with Lutfi, an expert on African football.
Lutfi, if you could just tell the viewers about Morocco's qualification process leading up to World Cup in Russia.
Yes, it was, to be fair, it started because, our African qualifiers are on two years and in two phases. It started quite simply and easily with a first win in the preliminary round before the group stages against Sao Tome and Principe. Home and away, they beat one of the, let's be honest, one of the punching bags of African football. They beat them, and they were at that time under the leadership of the legendary player there, and even in African Jello, their former coach Badou Zaki, who was one of the greatest African keepers ever, and one of the best players, obviously, of Moroccan football. Then they had a problem with him after some after a very dull start of dual games, they decided to hire Hervé Renard, who had just left Ivory Coast after winning the AFCON and fulfilling one of their long dreams, and then the change started to operate. First of all, they were drawn in probably one of the toughest groups of the tournament, of the group stages. They were drawn with Mali, a very physical side. Ivory Coast were arch favourites at the moment of the draw, and as they were the reigning African champions, and Gabon, who were led by Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the Dortmund and now the Arsenal star. They started quite difficultly. They started with two barren draws at home and away against. They hosted Ivory Coast, and they drew in Gabon in the first match day. Then they drew in against Ivory Coast at home. Then they managed to turn the tables, and in the last four games, which were played from August to November, they qualified, and they didn't concede, as you probably saw, they didn't concede a single goal during those group stages. They beat Mali 6-0, and it was quite very difficult to do that, because Mali are known for being very tough defensively and very physical. Then they drew, they managed a barren draw, goalless draw in Bamako, although they could and should have won it if Hakim Ziyech had scored his penalty. And then they managed to get a win over Gabon in Casablanca in His Royal Highness Mohamed V Stadium. then they got the situation, you know, they wanted, they had a decider in Abidjan against Ivory Coast, against in the den of the lions, in a certain way, against les éléphants. They managed to silence them quite easily, you know, and very fastly. They scored two goals. They scored two goals in the first half, and it was, you know, it was a start they were even not dreaming of. And yes, and after that they qualified, and they ended a 20 year absence at the World Cup in the World Cup level, and it was completely deserved, as they were definitely the best, you know, and it was quite a remarkable and a formidable turn of events, you know, because we were all expecting, you know, as we were all expecting Ivory Coast to qualify, but Morocco managed to turn the tables and show some extreme solidity either home and away, as you know, they didn't concede a single goal during the entire group stage campaign to book their ticket to the World Cup and to finally come back on the world scene in Russia, this time with a very renowned, very talented bunch of players.
Lotfi, looking at Morocco and following them from afar, it seems like you could say that they are quite similar to Iran, at least that's what we hear and from what we've seen, in the sense that they set up very compact and quite good defensively, but then they're very lethal on the counter-attack. Could you tell us how much of this is true, obviously, and what is Renard's go-to tactics?
I think yes, the parallel with Iran, I think, is pretty is very good and is very true and precise, because you know they have since Hervé Renard's appointment, they have this capacity to be extremely solid defensively. I would say they are even probably the best defense in Africa, and it's quite surprising, because if you compare, for instance, pound for pound, they don't have technically and the best player at the best positions in the African scene to have the best defense in African football. But if you consider on the field, they are clearly ahead the rest defensively speaking, as you said, and they have also and the parallel again with Iran is very precise. They have this some creative talent, you know, as you have I don't know if they play if they are called up, you have Ali Poor, for instance, of the guys like Sardar Azmoun, etc. They have guys, for instance, like Hakim Ziyech, their marvel. They managed to snap from Netherlands. He was Netherlands begged him to play for Netherlands, but he picked the country of his parents. They have Amin Harit of Schalke 04. Thank you. They have also the veteran Mubarak Boussoufa, who is in the midfield, the player of Al Jazeera, who is now feeling like a 17-year-old player, even though he's old, but he's very good. And you know, and they have also they have two things which are pretty rare, you know, because Mubarak Boussoufa still insisting on him. You know, he has been formed as a playmaker or either as an offensive attacker, and now he's playing almost as a holding midfielder. He's playing as a holding midfielder, and I think it has been one of the discoveries of Hervé Renard, you know, because he put them there, and I would say personally, I didn't thought that Mubarak Boussoufa, knowing him for so much time, that he had, for instance, the work rate and the qualities, the defensive qualities to play at this position. And they have also a thing which is typical from Renard team, you know. He loves kind of random strikers. You know, they don't have a top class, for instance, nine or a top class striker like some African teams had, for instance, in the past, or some African teams are currently having. They have a guy, for instance, they have Khalid Boutaib, who is playing he left our French league there, you know, and he just signed in a mid-table team in Turkey. They had also, yes, they have those players. And I think that's probably the biggest gains from Hervé Renard. They have also, I think you know him, Ashraf Hakimi, who is probably one of the best prospects on the African scene, considering the full back position, either on the right or on the left. They have Hamza Mendil, who is playing at Lille, and who has been also, he's one of those Renard players. You know, he's not, Hervé Renard called him, although he was playing in, I think he was playing in Lille reserves, you know, and he managed to establish himself in the Morocco's starting 11. And they have also since two or three months they have some talents emerging from the local scene. They have probably the two biggest talents which emerged in the past year, in the past month. You have first of all you have Ashraf Ben Sharki, the $5 million man who left destroyed everyone in African Champions League with Wydad. Then he signed with El Hilal Riyadh during the Chan, and he has been called up. He was even called up for the decider, even though he made a cameo. You know, he played 5-6 minutes, but he's very good. And you have the striker. I hope for him they have the striker who is. I hope for them. Sorry, the striker who could resolve their problem and they could stop calling up. Those random strikers. They have Ayoub El Kaabi, who has been formidable and sensational, to say the least, at Chan, which is a sort of AFCON for players based in local leagues. You know, he scored 9 goals and he destroyed everyone. You know, and it's strongly rumored and it will be. It's very likely that he will be called up for the future FIFA date. I think it's on March, if I'm not wrong, and he could solve the problem of a problem of the nine, the striker problem Morocco have now.
Lotfi, the last time Morocco was in the World Cup was 20 years ago in 1998 with the likes of Mustafa Hadji, Chippo and Basir, some of the three biggest names in Moroccan football, arguably. Now you're transitioning into a great manager, Hervé Renard, huge name in African football. He's won the African Cup of Nations with Ivory Coast and Zambia. What are fans' expectations from him, the media and the pundits, you would say?
I think personally, I would say since January 2017, I think there has been quite, in the past, before January 2017, sorry, there was quite a love and hate relationship between the fans and the national team, you know, because I would say that the results weren't there, and there's a very, very strong culture of club football in Morocco, you know, and as the result weren't there, the fans get. And for after years, you know, because Morocco had for years poor results, which weren't at par with their prestige and the quality of their footballers. I think since AFCON 2017, the Moroccan fans, I think, finally found a real team, you know, contrary to the past. And it's mainly due, even if they were eliminated in quarters, you know, of AFCON. They found a real team, and you know we saw the impact of this as they were warmly welcomed after reaching the quarters in AFCON after being eliminated by Egypt. They were warmly welcomed while coming back in Casablanca. Then this this love, for instance, kept growing till the end of the qualification of the qualifiers. You know, it was quite like you know, we are fully behind you, because you know we have a common goal, so let's achieve it, and then we will see what happened next. And they managed to achieve it, you know, because and I think yes, the turning point was surely the AFCON 2017. Then the result came, and etc. And the peak was when they qualified for World Cup. And considering the chances, I think many of African fans in general, you know, we are waiting for our teams to have good draws at World Cup to have hope, you know, because on this group, sadly for them, Morocco aren't favorite, you know. And that's, I think, that hampered on their chances. But I would say that they believe that they can do it, especially as you know they are Morocco have nothing to lose compared to the two superpower who are in the group with the likes of the two superpowers, Spain and Portugal. So I think yes, maybe this attitude to have nothing to lose and to surprise maybe one of the two could help them. But you know, if we make a parallel with 1988, you know, with all my due respect for Scotland and Norway, you know, Morocco had a team which had a chance, a real chance actually. In a group like this, with I think it was Brazil, Norway, Morocco, and Scotland, and I think they should have even qualified, and you know they had this chance because Brazil at that time were untouchable and unreachable for the first spot. They had a real chance to qualify behind Brazil, but now you have the two big teams, and it will be a very difficult, at my eyes, to qualify, as they have, I would say, probably the toughest group possible for an African team with us, Tunisia, with England, Panama, and Belgium.
Okay, Lutfi, tell us how you expect, in terms of a formation, for Rena to line up against Iran and maybe throughout the World Cup. And where would you say is the team's weakness?
I would say that they would play in a 3-3 at the back, 5 at in the midfield, or with 2 full backs and 2 in the 2 in front, because they play like this. They surprise some teams in AFCON with such a formation, and it has been very. It has been very useful at during the qualifiers. The main weakness, I would say, for Morocco would be, you know, they have, because they are like some many renowned team, you know, every renowned team. They have this problem of if they find, you know, with all my respect for our African first, with our African teams, we don't face, for instance, teams which are tactically as even if the level has partially increased, we don't face teams which are tactically much this tough to break. You know, because we face, for instance, to be honest and fair and square, we face, for instance, Minos who parked the bus. A bit of pressure and then they crumble immediately, or they crumble after an hour of football. But now they will have it's their biggest challenge, I think. And secondly, more of that, I think they could have a problem of creativity, you know, because Iran are well tactically well drilled. They are defensively very solid, and they will play I would say almost against their mirror, you know, the mirror team, if I can say that, you know, because as you said and as Babak made the parallel, the excellent parallel at the beginning of the podcast, I think the both teams are similar, and I just hope personally that it won't have an impact, even if I just hope it won't have an impact on the game, because both teams have plenty of talent, offensively speaking, and we could have a great game if it's open a bit, and because both teams, as I said, have a top have quality footballers either at the back or in front and even in the middle. So yes, I just hope that their two weaknesses, as I said, probably they have also some inexperience also, if it can be some weaknesses, the inexperience of some of their players, of some of their fullbacks, like I said, Ashraf Hakimi, even though he plays in Real Madrid, he's only 18, you know, or something like this, 18 or 19. They have Hamza Mendil, even though he's not playing, he's no more the regular since 2-3 games. They have this problem of inexperience in some parts, but generally, you know, they have guys who are playing probably the biggest. They will play the three biggest game of their lives. You know, they have, for instance, Mehdi Ben Atiyah. He was playing for the anecdote. He was playing in my hometown club. He will play his first World Cup, although he's 31. He has been there with Morocco, for instance, since the beginning, even in their dark years when they were drawing at home against the Central African Republic, etc., losing in Tanzania. He was there. They have Mubarak Boussoufa, who has been even older than him. He's there since a decade, you know. So for them, they have this perfect blend of experience at a higher level, because you know, Mehdi Ben Atiyah plays at Juventus. He plays against top footballer every 3 days or 7 days. They have Mubarak Boussoufa. Yes, they have Nabil Dirar, who is very good and who knows how the top level is. And they have, and I think it makes a balance with some talents who are still there, who are the fresh talents who are upcoming, and they have also this problem of 9, as said. But if they find the key for the problem of 9, of striker, even though Evera knows how to play with a below average, I would say, striker, and very random. I think yes, if they found a very top striker, they could cause problems, because you know, the quality is there. They have some weak points. They are not a team made of Jesus and his apostles. So they have some weak points, like everyone, you know, like teams, like all teams. And why not? Maybe why not to create to beat Iran, and maybe by a miracle to take some points from Portugal, or yes, Portugal, because Spain look unreachable, and maybe yes, why not? But it will be, as said, for me personally, it will be very complicated, as it's one of the toughest group of the World Cup, sadly for Moroccan friends.
I have two questions for you, Lotfi. If you could just tell us where Morocco, you know, could exploit Iran's weakness, and on top of that, what are fans thinking about, you know, the reigning national team and Carlos Queiroz, the pundits, or, you know, former players?
I would say that personally, if Morocco could exploit Iran's weakness, if I understood the question well, by playing, especially on, I would say, if they play on with on the wings, yes, on the wings, yeah, that was I was looking for. On the wings, as they have, you know, they have very fast players. They have their fullbacks either Nabil Diraw or even Hamza Mendil or Ashraf Hakimi, they're pretty fast. They have, and I think that could be the key, because they have some really fast players, and they have also an X factor, which is Atmaïs Hakim Ziyech, who is definitely underrated. I don't know why, maybe because he doesn't play in one of those glamorous and whatever leagues. And he's maybe Atmaïs the real X factor, you know, because he has this capacity and this formidable skill to make the pass or the touch which can change everything. And yes, I think these are the two biggest Morocco weapons. And thirdly, I would say the set pieces, especially corners, when and also crosses coming from one of the two points with the full backs. I think also, yeah, the set pieces are Morocco are very good on that. They scored Mehdi Ben Atia, for instance, scored the goal which silenced the Ivoirians and qualified Morocco for the World Cup in the last match day. They scored many goals also like this. I think yes, also, and they have some defenders who are pretty tall. They have Mehdi Ben Atia. They have some very good set piece taker with either Nabil Diraw. They have also Mubarak Boussoufa, who is probably, I think he's the unsung hero of the team, and but that's only my opinion. And they have Hakim Ziyech also. Yes, they have Hakim Ziyech, Mubarak Boussoufa, and Nabil Diraw, who are excellent set piece takers, and they know how to play them well. So I think yes, those are the three. I would say the three biggest weapons of Morocco against Iran, and they have also they are similar also, as they go very well on, they play very well on counters, etc. But that's the very not touch at its best, you know.
Lutfi, your description is almost like you said, it reflects a lot of the tactics and strengths that Iran also has.
Yes.
But formation-wise, there seems to be a distinct difference going with three at the back. So we're presuming that Hakimi and maybe Diraw are going to play at the wings, on the wing-back positions, unless Mendil comes in. But the two strikers, okay, you mentioned the number nine, but then what about the second striker? Are they playing someone from midfield over there, or is it another conventional forward?
I think yes, they play more. I was quite wrong. I think they play more in 3-4-1-1. I would say with a man who is just behind the striker, who is
3-5-1, 3-4-2-1, 3-4-1-1.
4-1-1.
Yeah, but we're still 4-1. No, then we're short a player. I think 3-4. That's 7 players, and then you need 2-1. I think.
Yes, I think yes. So
3-4-2-1. So 2 players behind the number 9.
Yes, logically, yes. I think they were like this, and okay. or either they play with or it's either yes they play with a 3-4 or 4. Or maybe sometimes they play with four at the back, one in the midfield, and they manage. They are very versatile tactically, and I think for me that was probably one of the biggest surprise, you know, of the qualifiers, you know, because they generally African teams only. Master very well only one tactic, but they mastered very well too, and it was a heartwarming surprise to see them doing that. For instance, you know, in the AFCON they played their opener with a 4-1-4-1. I think yes, they play with a Yes, for instance, in AFCON, their opener, they played with a back four made of Nabil Dira at right back, Ben Atia, Marwan Da Costa, the former Olympiakos, I think he's still playing there, Hamza Mendil. They played with the Karim El Ahmedi also, who is one of the, he's with his mate Mubarak Boussoufa, one of the best. He's the pillar of the, one of the pillars of the team. He's also one of the oldest players. They played with Mehdi Karsela, Romain Saïs, Omar El Kadouri on the wings, both Karsela and Kadouri on the wings. And they played with a striker who was Aziz Bouhadouz, and he was the lone striker. And they played in their first game with a 4-1-4-1. Then, secondly, they played they came back to a five-man defense. They played with Hamza Mendil on the left, Nabil Djira on the right, a trio made of Romain Saïs, Manuel Da Costa, or Marwan Da Costa, Mehdi Ben Atia, the captain. On the midfield, they play with Karim El Ahmedi, Mubarak Boussoufa, Omar El Kadouri, and Faisal Faj, just close to Aziz Bouhadouz in a 5-3-2. Then after that, they played. Then, for instance, again, Ivory Coast in the AFCON, they changed to a 4-3-3, you know, because that's what I think. That's also, I forgot it, but that's also one of their biggest point. You know, they are very flexible tactically, but as said, we have a concern again. As said, because we don't face. With all my respect, because for our formidable African teams, etc., we don't face teams which are tactically, they will face a team which is tactically as good as them. So let's see how it goes. But their tactical flexibility created many problems and was one of the biggest reasons why they qualified for World Cup during the qualifiers, after being starting badly, because you know a draw, they collected, for instance, just 2 points out of six in two games, you know, and it was almost nobody gave them a chance. You know, they had to have a very favorable result in their favor and to win all the games, and they almost did it. You know, they didn't lose. They won three games out of four, the last, and especially with this decider in Abidjan, will stay in the history of African football. And so yes, I think yes, their flexibility will be one of their biggest point strength, but a concern. Again, they have faced a team which was tactically as good as them, to be honest. During the last years, I think they only faced a team which was as good as them, and it was Egypt, you know, because it was probably the two best teams of AFCON, and sadly, only one of them had to qualify for the, it was an early final, if you prefer. And sadly, one of them had to qualify for the semis, and Egypt did it. And it was an excellent tactical battle between Everina and Hector Cooper. So yes, their tactical flexibility is incredible at our African level. But I say we have a concern, because you know we don't face extraordinary or even top class teams. You know, with top class tacticians, let's be honest, and that's why it will be very interesting to see them as said, let's not forget it. It will be Everina's first World Cup, as he failed in the past to qualify for. He failed to qualify, and it was one of his biggest dreams and aspirations to coach an African team in the World Cup, and probably he has, because he's very surprising, you know, he has probably some tricks in his bag, and we don't know. But as said, the concern is tactical, even if they are excellent and top of the crop in Africa with Egypt, certainly. they will play teams tactically which are from another level from what they meet in African on the African scene with even just with Iran, and it's not bootlicking or whatever. You know, we don't face we don't face teams which are so well drilled. They face teams who are either very open or for instance parking the bus and praying for a miracle and crumbling at the end. So yes, it will be another challenge, and even not only for Morocco, for African teams in general, it will be this World Cup will be another challenge tactically, because we will face teams which are definitely at a higher level, far higher level than us tactically, and maybe some have been lucky at the draw, and some sadly for them have been drawn with some big fish.
Yeah, definitely the first match of Group B, it's definitely going to come to a huge tactical matchup between Carlos Queiroz and Herve Renard. And just the last question, Lotfi, from my end, before I pass it on to Babak, is that if you could just give us your insight and maybe what the media is right now saying in Morocco about, you know, Carlos Queiroz and the reigning national team, if we get just a little bit of an insight into that.
I think, yes, for Moroccan media, journals, and fans, the goal is clear. the target is clear. It's to beat Iran on the opener, to have a chance against in the second match, and to have a chance actually to qualify, because a draw would almost send Morocco and probably Iran also in the back home, you know. And the goal is clear, I would say. They have to beat Iran, and I think also that personally they have to beat Iran to qualify and to have hopes to make something, because maybe after beating Iran they could surprise one of the two, and because I think personally that maybe 1 point, 4 points could be enough to qualify, because I think Portugal will have problems to beat one of Iran or Morocco if one of them has won the opener between both. So I think yes, and I know many Moroccans who told me also that the game against Iran is already almost a do or die clash, you know, because on the paper and for both teams, those are the three easiest points to get in the entire group, in the entire World Cup campaign. So yes, everything will be determined by the result of Morocco against Iran, and we could imagine, but I think it will take a great miracle, I would say. We could imagine maybe a draw between Morocco and Iran, but maybe by a miracle Morocco beating one of Portugal or Spain, but Portugal being the likeliest between huge courts. But I think yes, the game against Iran is crucial. Is already crucial, and maybe it's a bit tough to have to play your entire World Cup campaign on your opener. It's maybe a bit tough for both teams, because both teams have shown extreme solidity, and I think even both teams, to be fair, if they had been drawn in other groups, I think they could have had a real chance of qualifying, a proper chance of qualifying for a round of 16. But now they have to play already a do or die clash in their World Cup opener, and it will determine, I think, for both Iran and Morocco the fate, and the goal is clear, as I said, for Morocco, and even for Everton, I think He said that he knows he's wary of Iran threats, and he knows that this game will be crucial for the future of Morocco in the World Cup.
Final question for you. Give us a prediction for Iran against Morocco.
Oh, I would say, personally, I would love to see Morocco winning it, but I think it will end on a 1-1 draw or something like this. But I hope to see some goals because I won't hide that I would be with the quality on the field in both sides, in both Iran and the Morocco's team. I would be pretty sad to not see goals in the game. And I hope, personally, as I said, I hope Morocco will win. But I think it will end. My head, if you prefer, says Morocco. My heart, if you prefer, says Morocco. But my head thinks that it will end on a draw and a draw with some goals.
That's something like our own Babak would say, but more like hard, more or less being Iran. But nonetheless, Lotfi, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast. If we'll have your information obviously in the bio, but could you let folks know where they could find you?
Oh yes, you can find me on Twitter at Lotfi Wada, LOTFIWADA, and that's where I am. I ramble about African football and many other things, and that's where I am generally most of the time.
Lotfi, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure speaking to you today.
Thank you for your invitation. It was for me a honor to be there, and thank you again for your invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lotfi.